Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the National Employment Network conference call. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press the star followed by the one on your telephone. If you need to reach an operator at any time, please press star zero. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Thursday, May 7th, 2015. I would now like to turn the conference over to LaWanda Hawkins. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the May National Employment Network conference call. My name is LaWanda Hawkins, and I am the Program Integrity Manager. Thank you for joining us on this beautiful day. Once again, we have a full agenda, so we'll get started right away with our general announcements, and I'll turn it over to Kara Kaplan. Kara?
Thanks, LaWanda. Good afternoon. I just wanted to alert people. I know I am the branch chief for the Employment Network Service Branch, and we have been going through every EN, determining who has not sent back their 2015 APOR, who has no suitability, and in conjunction with the Office of Acquisition and Grants, those who have not sent back an APOR and or do not have suitability clearance will be getting cure notices very shortly. They're writing those up as we speak. For those who did not send APORs back, you will have 10 days to cure and send those back. If that is not done, actions could be taken to terminate your contract. For suitability, you will have 60 days to clear suitability, or actions will be taken to terminate your contract. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Kara. We'll move on to Rob Pass, who will speak on the SSA Marketing Summit. Rob?
Yes, hi. Good afternoon, everyone. I just wanted to give you an update on the Marketing Summit. As you may recall, David Weaver indicated in his message several weeks back in regards to the discontinuation of the Marketing CD, he had indicated that we would be setting up a marketing summit or a series of meetings to discuss marketing initiatives that we could take to support EN marketing practices. And I'm pleased to announce today that the first date for the marketing summit is Wednesday, June 24th, and it will occur in Dallas, Texas. And what we have been able to obtain is some meeting space from the Dallas Regional Office to conduct this meeting. The address of the Dallas Regional Office is 1301 Young Street, and that's in downtown Dallas. And again, what will happen is we are currently working on the agenda for this particular meeting, and we will provide you with information as far as the logistics associated and what we will have happened during the meeting. Just to give you an overview, we're going to try to take advantage of the fact that the Dallas Regional SSA folks are gathering to meet, and we're hoping to include the local AWIC at the meeting. So we're going to make it a little broader than just having a marketing summit, so to speak. We are going to talk about things that you do as ENs to market your services to our beneficiaries. So we would ask that, and we're looking for some participation from ENs as well in terms of sharing with the group their best practices and their techniques and their materials with a larger audience to talk about ways they've been able to gain foothold as far as drawing business into them. The other thing that we are going to do is we're going to talk about things that SSA is currently engaged in to market the ticket program. We're going to talk about the website. We'd like to get some feedback from participants as far as things that, you know, what their thoughts are about the things that we're currently engaged in, and maybe identify some additional opportunities for SSA to support marketing activities. So that's going to be the crux of the session, and also we will expand that a little more to talk about more general ticket program related issues. We plan to include some local WIPA representation as well as PABS representation at the meeting. We'd like for them to walk through the services that they provide. We'd like to have some question and answer in the communication session. It will be focused around marketing, but it will also include some more general question and answer session. And again, our contractors will be there as well, both the VAS contractor and Maximus. VAS will walk through some information concerning virtual job fairs that we're planning. They will also talk about their marketing activities that they're engaged in, and also a chance for you to see what kind of things that they have available for you to market your own businesses. Additionally, Maximus will be there to handle any questions or issues that you might have concerning, you know, operational issues, logistics, other areas where maybe some training issues or things of that nature. So we'll provide that. We'll facilitate that as well. So we're excited about this. That's the main piece. We're encouraging as many of you to express an interest as possible. And the way for you to do that, and again, we will have some information sent out to you shortly, but we're going to give you the name of a contact at Maximus who you can coordinate with to answer any questions and express an interest in attending. And I'm going to, at this point, let me ask the folks at Maximus, can we provide that information now?
Sure.
Okay.
Okay, that person for contact will be Jenny Purdom at Maximus, and her email address is Jennifer Purdom, P-U-R-D-U-M, at Maximus.com.
So I would ask that those who may be interested or would like to essentially register for this event to email Jennifer and express your interest to her directly. We do have some considerations in terms of space. We think we can facilitate a pretty large meeting, but we want to make sure that we have the right kind of space dedicated for this. So what I would encourage for those who would like to participate in this initial meeting is to determine whether or not you're going to participate rather soon, so that we can get an idea of what the headcount will be. And again, the contact for that is Jennifer Purdom at Maximus.
Yes, at Maximus.com.
At Maximus.com. Okay, and with that, I'm going to kick it back to Kara for one brief announcement.
I apologize. I also forgot to tell people, those who do not have suitability clearance or did not send back their APOR currently, you are on a hard hold for payments and ticket assignments, as well as getting into the secure provider portal and from the directory. And once you send that stuff in, your hold is lifted immediately. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Kara. Okay, that wraps up our general announcements. We'll move on to ticket portal updates and testimonials, and we'll have Patino. Oh, I'm sorry. We need to go back to general announcements and speak in reference to the virtual job fair. We have Donald Jones, who's the online and social media outreach lead for VAS. Donald?
Thank you, and thank you for providing the time to talk to you today. I'd like to give an update on where we're standing with the virtual job fairs that, as most of you know, have been in development for several months now. And also, we would like an opportunity to receive some feedback from you in terms of one requirement that we're being asked to perform from the Office of Privacy and Disclosure. So first, we did have a dry run of our virtual job fair about 2 months ago, where we did have some service providers as well as beneficiaries within the environment, and that dry run went very well. We were able to get actionable feedback from those who participated. And generally the participants found the platform easy to use, and we look forward to being able to, and we were able to improve the platform based on that feedback, and we look forward to showing you that platform as we are able to implement the job fairs later on this year. We have been working with the Office of General Counsel as well as the Office of Privacy Disclosure within Social Security to make sure that we're able to do these virtual job fairs in line with current agency regulation. This is the first time that the agency has done an activity like this, so it has been taking some time for ORDAs and us to work through some of the requirements that they have. There is one requirement, though, that we wanted to talk to you about today, because we are potentially asking you to take a part in it. Because the information that the beneficiary is uploading into the virtual job fair environment, including the resume as well as their profile information, is being uploaded into a system in Expo, which we are is a vendor that we are contracting through via Social Security through the BAS contractor. Under agency regulation, that information is considered to be Social Security data. It's not that we're going to be taking that data and using it for any purpose other than enabling beneficiaries to connect with employers, but it's basically under the protection of Social Security and Social Security's regulations. Because of that, there is a requirement for those beneficiaries who are participating in the job fairs to provide our consent. Provide consent for that data to have understanding of what that data is being used for, and to basically give us permission to release their resume and profile data to the employers who are participating in the job fair. Social Security regulations does not allow for an electronic signature, some sort of other verification other than an actual written signature on a consent form for this activity. So there is a requirement for us to get from the beneficiaries who are interested, who are going to participate in these job fairs. We need to be able to get them to have a paper form that they fill out and sign. We investigated whether there would be a facility for us to have them electronically submit those, but that would require a beneficiary to scan it in and then upload to a secure server. And knowing that many beneficiaries might not have access to a scanner or might have technological difficulties with that, we would have to still create an additional facility related to storage and mailing and all those kind of things, which would actually remove the efficiencies that would come from an electronic submission. We also understand that you as service providers already are storing and maintaining files that are for your beneficiaries, whether it be their IWPs, whether it be other forms and paperwork, and you already are following requirements in terms of having the security needed to store PII. So what we would like the feedback from you on is whether it is feasible for those service providers that have beneficiaries that are going to be participating in the virtual job fairs, which from our earlier communication, we are asking you, of course, to work closely with them within the context of those job fairs to make sure that, A, we have beneficiary candidates who are job ready, and, B, they are supported in the context of the job fair. What we're looking for feedback on is whether it is a reasonable request for employment networks to be asked to, once the beneficiary fills out this form, that you, on their behalf, are able to keep that form on file. We're not asking you to necessarily submit it. We're asking you to just simply keep it on file in case there's a time when we might need that that form, and we simply need to be able to validate that that form has been kept on file by you. So, the folks from ORDA, if you have any additional comments you'd like to make before we ask, open the line for some potential feedback on that?
No, we're good.
Okay. Good. That means I explained it properly. So if it's possible, if we could just take a few minutes to maybe take a couple comments that people might have on that that request. We certainly don't want this to be a burden for you, but simply because of the requirements of the agency, we need to find the most efficient way for us to gain that consent from beneficiaries so that they are able to participate in the job fairs. So if I guess whoever has to ask the operator to maybe open the line for a couple minutes.
Okay, let's go to the phone lines for a few minutes to address any questions.
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by the one on your telephone. That was star followed by the one. Your first question comes from the line of Kanisha Humphrey.
Hi, I just want to go back to the from the general announcements about the suitability in the APOR. I wanted to find out what was it that I think Carol had said that if you don't have the APOR or clear for suitability, then your agency would get what was the notice? I didn't quite get it.
It's called a cure notice, and it'll come from the contracting office. And basically it explains what you need to do to cure what you're not doing correctly right now. So if you haven't completed your APOR, the link is, we put the link back up. You can fill it out now, send it back. Maximus will notify our staff within the day, and you will be lifted from all exams.
Okay, and is that link in the chat room or?
LaWanda, could you guys put that up on here? I don't know it off the top of my head.
I'm sorry, the link for what, Kara?
The APOR link.
Yes, we can get the APOR link up in the chat room.
Okay.
Okay. Do we have any more questions for Donald?
Your next question comes from the line of Stephen Girk.
Hi, this is Steve Gerke in Colorado with SKG Career Services. So what you're asking is the beneficiary sign a consent form. They physically give us that form. We scan it into our computer and keep it.
Yes, that's exactly right. So when they are provided the registration, they'll have the opportunity to download that form, or you can have that form on file. We already have it pretty much filled out with all the information they need on it. They'll just basically have to provide their contact information and sign it, and you just keep it in whatever secure store you have. And just keep it on file. That's all we're asking.
Okay, no problem. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And at this time, there are no further questions.
Okay, thank you. If you do have any feedback on this, what we're asking you to do, please communicate through your regular channels to make sure that that communication is given to ORDA so they can share that feedback with us. Again, we're really looking forward to announcing these virtual job fairs when we are able to. We are making progress, but it's certainly there's a lot of work that we're doing in the background to make sure that we're able to have that happen. So you will know as soon as we do in terms of when those job fairs will be happening. So thank you, and I'll return it to the facilitator.
Thank you, Donald. We're going to continue on with the ticket portal updates and testimonials. First up, we have Linda Patino. Linda?
Hi to all. This is Linda Patino. I'm with Tulare County Office of Education, the Ticket to Success program. We're actually a national employment network in California. And one of the things I wanted to share with you is I was invited to participate in the Social Security portal when it first was being discussed. And some of the things I've had to go through were not so easy. So what we decided today is just kind of share some of the bumps that I've had to go through, time frames on getting some of those processes moving forward, and then also to share with you some of the experiences I've had working with the Social Security portal. So we'll start, some of the highlights I wanted to share is, first of all, the setting up of the Social Security account with the extra security. Like many, I was having difficulty adding the extra security to my account, and I had to finally call the toll-free Social Security line, spoke with a worker who was able to unblock whatever was on the account, And as of September the 12th of 2014, I was able to add that extra security. It took 2 weeks to receive my letter. I received it on the 26th of September. And I notified Teresa Schilling that I was able to get the extra security on the 29th. And was advised that I was actually added to the ITOP system by the 3rd of October. So it moved kind of fast, but when it was happening, it seemed like it took forever. When I first signed up, the other issue I was having is when I continued to sign in, I keep coming up with the same personal information. I was like, okay, well, this is not Social Security's portal. And what I had found out is I had the wrong link. So Teresa sent me the link, and I was able to get right into the portal. So the whole initial process took 4 weeks from the beginning to the end of being able to get into the portal. It took 4 weeks to process. But since then, I've been able to get each one of my staff and through the process, and it took approximately 2 weeks for them to get the letter, and then almost right away, once they got their letter, I contacted Teresa, and she was able to get them into the portal pretty fast. So it took them about 2.5-3 weeks at the most to be able to go through the process. So that was kind of our issue with getting set up with our Social Security account. The login process, you know, the convenience, I was sharing with them how compared to the portal that we were using with OSM, which I like that portal too, you have a number that you would have to, that is assigned to you, and you can go in and change it to whatever your destination is. But the convenience of this new login method using the cell phone or the text security to our cell phones has really been beneficial. And the reason is because I work in various places. Being able to travel, go to those locations, I don't have time for my staff to have to set at the computer or at the phone waiting for me to be able to get the call authorized to be able to work from whatever that location is. Now with the new process, since it's individualized and it comes to my cell phone, it doesn't matter where I'm at or what time basically that I need to sign in, I can actually get that code, sign in or log in from whatever location I'm working at. So that's been a huge, huge convenience to us, being able to access the portal. As far as the ticket assignments, unassignments, checking eligibility, I appreciate the fact that it's real-time, instant results. You don't have to guess if it's been completed or not. It's like, did it go in? Has it been received? So it's been nice because it is real-time. The other thing, just to kind of highlight some of the things I've noticed on the portal since the beginning, is when you pull up a beneficiary, even though we don't have the Social Security numbers visible, you can actually see if they're SSI, SSDI, if they're concurrent. It will have that information listed, which is nice because, you know, it may take a little bit to get your BPQY back to be able to identify what their benefit type is. The other thing, it will show you if they had prior EN or VR services, if there's been previous payments and when those were made and what type were made. The one benefit I think that everyone's going to appreciate is the payment process. The type of payments I've been able to do so far is evidentiary and certification. Every different level, phase one, phase two, the outcomes and use on pay stubs, work number, the employment statements, and the certifications, I've used it for the CUBER that I still had information on that I would be able to submit payments. As far as the length of time required to request the payments, it's less paperwork involved because you don't have to do all of the documents, the forms. You just enter the month and year of the payment that you're requesting, the type of payment requested, the employer's information as far as their name and the type of earning or the beginning and ending earnings and the pay date. So So the basic information, you print the fax cover sheet that you're given with a barcode that's on it. And what I would recommend, because you are given at that point a reference number, it's like a case number, I would write that on every one of those attachments with verification that you're going to send with that fax sheet, just in case something gets misplaced. But that's what we've been doing, and it's been going through really good. Instantly, you go to the pending payments that's on the portal, and you'll be able to see that that's already in there with that case number, that reference number, which is good. It helps you with the tracking process. And just a note, the phase one pay request will prompt you, if you're going to go through the phase one process, it's going to prompt you to select either phase one, milestone one, two, three, four. The phase two and the outcomes does not prompt you to put that in. You're just going to select either phase two or outcome. And when processing certifications with QBER or the BPQY, you'd want to select that you don't have any earnings to submit. However, you want to put a note, the type of documentation that you are basing that request on. Either you put QBER, BPQY, or whatever the other type of verification is. But usually we know QBER is and BPQY, it's information they already have on file. It's in Social Security system, so you don't have to submit any documentation with those requests. The speed of the process on the payment turnaround, for those of you that don't want to wait 30 days or longer for payments, it's been really good because, like I say, it's instantly in there. My payments have been coming in between 10 to 13 days. So at the time I initialize that payment in the portal, 10 to 13 days I'm paid, which is great. If they're denied, then I'm able to review that information in the portal and follow up really promptly so that it prevents any delays in getting it taken care of. And on average, I've been signing into the portal, I would say several times throughout the day, because you want to monitor your payments, you want to check on assignments. So I've been in it pretty good bit, and I haven't run into too many complications. One thing, the team that's working with the IT group or whoever's, you know, managing all of the backside of it, it's they're open to conversation with you. If you have problems, difficulties, they're asking our feedback, which has been really helpful in us resolving and cleaning up some of those glitches. So overall, experience has been good. With anything new, there's a period of time to accept the change, to adjust to it, and to improve it where needed. I personally am very happy with the process and feel that with time it's going to continue to improve. That's my basic overview of what my experience has been with the portal, and I hope that yours goes a little bit smoother than my initial one, which it should.
Any questions? I will take questions at the end of the call. Thank you so much, Linda. That was
okay.
Wonderful. We'll move on to portal updates. Desiree Fitzgerald. Desiree?
Thank you, LaMonda. And thank you, too, Linda. I'm really glad that you were able to share that information with folks. Having Linda Patino share her experience and preparing for using the portal as a pilot participant, it really does drive home the fact that the ticket portal is for you all. It's for the service providers. It's for the convenience of the service providers. We wanted to do our part to make your job of facilitating beneficiaries returning to work and gaining financial independence. We wanted to make that process easier for you by running our programs more efficiently, and we hope that this automation is going to do just that. We believe using the portal will translate to administrative efficiencies for you all, and it will hopefully translate into improved customer service and improved productivity. So we're looking forward to you all joining us in this venture with the new automation. In June, we plan to begin implementing use of the new portal. Yes, you did hear that correctly. In June, it seems like no time ago, we had a year before it would be here. But this June, we plan to begin implementing use of the new portal, and we're going to do that in stages based on who is ready. If you use the current portal, IVR, and move it, those tools will cease to exist, and eventually the IPAPS portal will be the one-stop shop for services previously available through those various platforms. As we head into the home stretch with implementing the portal, we ask that each of you assess your readiness. It's really time to do that. If you haven't done it, please assess your readiness. You probably know what it takes to be ready by now, since we've been putting an emphasis on that over the past few months. But as a reminder, you have to have, if you plan to be a portal user, each individual who plans to use the portal has to have the suitability clearance, and you have to create a MySSA account with extra security, as Linda mentioned. And it was good that she was able to give some time frames associated with some of these things. There is the security level that requires the access through a code that will come to your cell phone for each entry to the portal. So once you've completed the registration in the MySSA account, then you would contact someone here at SSA. It may be your EN service branch representative or VR agencies would contact the VR help desk, but we have to have notification from you that you've completed those things. Of course, we have a record of the suitability, but we would need your credentials for your MySSA account, so that's why we have to receive contact from you when that is ready. As of last Friday, there were 377 individuals enrolled, or should I say ready, to use the portal, and that was representing 170 ENs and 31 VR agencies. We hope that this number continues to rise daily. We're keeping an eye on it weekly. What more did I want to say to you today? Well, we realize that some of you are in midstream with your preparation. We know that there are some folks that are registering for the accounts right now, and we still have folks going through suitability. So we do acknowledge that. But I did want to leave you with a few questions. The numbers that I cited, are you in those numbers? And what's the status of your agency's readiness? Do you have at least one person ready? Have you considered how many of your folks should prepare? If you haven't already done so, please consider whether you want various people in the portal, you know, who perform different functions. You might want a primary contact, a counselor, an IT person, a financial person. You need to consider how you would want to use the portal. Please take a serious note of that. We want to make sure that all of your needs will be met and that you'll have the right people cleared and ready to use the portal. Even if you don't use the current tools, we would urge you to go with us with the new portal and take advantage of some of the benefits that Linda mentioned. That are available to you in the new portal. Okay. I think that's pretty much what I wanted to say today. LaMonda?
Thank you, Desiree. And just to reiterate what Desiree has, the information she's given in reference to getting ready for the portal, you can find that information on the Ticket to Work website. With that, we'll move on to today's presentation. I'll turn it over to Charlene Dwyer, who will introduce our speakers for today. Charlene?
Thank you, LaWanda. Hello, everyone. I am pleased to introduce the presenters for today's topic, which is the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs and the Department of Labor's Collaborative Employment Service Model for Veterans with Disabilities. Jacqueline Zepp is a seasoned employment coordinator with the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, and she also has experience speaking on the DVA's employment service to employment networks and prospective employment network audiences. And our second presenter, Dolovsky is a senior program analyst with the U.S. Department of Labor Veterans Employment and Training Service, or the VETS program. Joel has extensive experience in the provision of employment services to veterans and in managing the VETS program national employment grants. So we will open the line for audience questions if we have time at the end of their presentation. And with that, Jacqueline, thank you for joining us, and I'm going to turn the presentation over to you.
Thank you, Charlene. Good afternoon. Again, my name is Jacqueline Zepp, and I am the Employment Coordinator with the Department of Veterans Affairs, Vocational Rehabilitation and Employment Division in Phoenix, Arizona. And today, I'm quickly going to go over our program and how we work closely with our DVOT partners to assist service-connected disabled veterans in securing employment. So next slide, please. So what is VA Voc Rehab? We are a benefit program, and we help service-connected disabled veterans obtain and maintain suitable employment and or achieve independence in their daily living. Our program is an employment program, and we always keep in mind that the end goal is suitable employment for our veterans. Next slide, please. So what do we consider suitable employment? We consider suitable employment to be consistent with the veteran's interests, aptitudes, and abilities, and the employment that the veteran secures should not aggravate their disabilities, and it should be stable and continuing, which means it shouldn't be temporary or seasonal work. It needs to be a permanent job. And the job goal requires some reasonably developed job skills and at a minimum some type of short-term training such as generally IT certifications, trade, and some other quick certifications. So we often get the question of who's eligible for our program, and I just briefly want to go over that with you, is that in order to be eligible for our program, the veteran cannot have had a dishonorable discharge and should have at least a 10% service-connected disability rating, and that disability rating has to be from the Department of Veterans Affairs. Next slide, please. Through their eligibility, they apply for our program, and then they have to be found entitled to services. So once they apply, we schedule them for orientation. The veterans will come in, they will meet with a counselor, and at this time, entitlement is determined. The veteran must have at least a 20% service-connected rating and be found with an employment handicap, or a 10% service-connected rating and be found to have a serious employment handicap. And the employment handicaps are based on the big picture of the veteran, and this includes looking at assessments, the background, their age, any legal issues, skill level, employment stability, and so they look at a lot of things when they're determining the entitlement to services. It must also be determined that our services are going to be are required to overcome an employment handicap, and that with the training and the services that we provide, that there's a reasonable expectation that the veteran will achieve suitable employment and be successfully rehabilitated. Next slide, please. Once entitlement has been determined, the client is going to work closely with the VR counselor to determine which employment track is suitable for that veteran. And we have a number of different tracks. Once the track is selected, they go through vocational exploration, an individual written rehabilitation plan is developed, and the track selection is made, and the veteran will begin that training or that certification or whatever it is, that whichever track selection is completed. Next slide, please. The nice thing is that about 90 to 120 days, that veteran is 90 to 120 days with them completing their IWRP or their training program, that veteran is referred to the employment coordinator for employment services. And at that time, we start to meet with them, and we develop an individualized employment assistance plan. In that plan, we develop objectives to assist the veteran in successful job placement. We work on the development of a number of things, professional resumes, that includes both federal and civilian, we assist with interviewing skills. We begin a networking circle. We provide them with Dress for Success workshops. We complete direct referrals to various federal agencies and to employers. All those things that they need assistance with, and to also help them be marketable and to be able to market themselves. In addition, once they've secured employment, we can also purchase certain items that they might be required to have in order for them to maintain employment, so such as tools. Next slide, please. Uniforms, short-term certifications, and for some of those harder-to-place veterans, we can also offer a special employer incentive where we can pay 50% of the veteran's salary for an extended period of time. We also work very closely with our DVOP partners, and we make direct referrals to them. They also assist with the job search, with career fairs, with employment workshops, with direct referrals, case management. And we are very fortunate here in the Phoenix office in that we have a DVOP that is located in our department, and he helps support our veterans, and also we have a job lab that's on site where veterans are able to come in and utilize our job lab to look for employment, to prepare their resume, and to get any of the support that they're needed, that is needed for them. So it's really great here in Phoenix. As a part of employment services, we also assist with the transitional support to employment. We oftentimes develop what we call non-paid work experiences to help with the transition for a veteran to civilian employment. And oftentimes, veterans have not worked in the civilian sector, or it's been a long time since they've worked. This becomes a win-win situation for both the agency and the veteran. Next slide, please. The non-paid work experience benefit for the veteran is it helps with that transition that they need. It supplements other training or experience. It provides them with hands-on work experience, and it helps build their resume and current work experience. It also helps them build that confidence that they need, and we provide a subsistence allowance. It's not a big subsistence allowance, but it's something to help with them getting to gas, lunch, all those things that go with needing to get to a workplace. And it also allows them to network and gain exposure to employment opportunities. Next slide, please. As I said before, it's a win-win situation because both for the veteran and the agency. The benefit to the agency is that they gain a quality worker. There really isn't a lot of red tape. The program is easy to set up. And there's minimal paperwork. We know with the government, we require a lot of paperwork and a lot of things that we do. And in this case, it's very, very minimal. The non-paid work experience, we can customize it to meet both the employer needs and the veterans' needs. And the placement must be at any local, state, or federal government facility. The beauty of the program is that at any time during their non-paid work experience, the agency can recruit them through a direct hiring authority, or if they fall under any other special hiring authorities, the agency can directly pick them up. It has been very, very successful here in the Phoenix area. Next slide, please. I briefly spoke about the special employer incentive. We can pay, in some cases, up to 50% of the veteran's salary for an extended period of time. And we generally will write these contracts for anywhere between 3 and 6 months. The employment coordinator does that, and we work with the civilian employer in setting this up, making sure that there is a good training plan, and monitoring the veteran for success. Next slide, please. There are over 80 employment coordinators across the country that are in regional offices and outbased offices. So I encourage you to contact your local VA, VR&E employment coordinator and explore that opportunity of partnering to build a partnership to help with your clients and our clients to help them succeed and build success. My contact information is listed, so please feel free to call or email me with any questions that you might have. Now I'd like to turn it over to Joel.
Thank you, Jacqueline. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Jacqueline laid out what her agency does at the local level. I will discuss how the DBOP specialist complements what her agency does for individuals in need of vocational rehabilitation prior to being considered ready to enter a suitable employment. Since our time together is limited, I'll get right to it. Can we go to slide number 2, please? Thank you. If the term DBOP looks familiar, it's either because you were already aware of its existence, learned of it because of the unique relationship they maintain with the disability program navigators a few years ago, or you remember that my colleague Tim Green from Vets National Office of Strategic Outreach provided you a presentation on our programs a few months ago. I'm from the Office of National Program, and this slide provides a reference which applies to shaping the current role of DVOP and LVER staff, in this case, the Disabled Veterans Outreach Program. I don't know if you can see the entire slide on your screen. If so, you'll see that I think we're on slide 3, and I want to be on slide 2, if we could back up. I think we're going forward. I'm sorry. Slide 2. There we go. Thank you. The current slide provides references which apply to shaping the current role, as I mentioned. This has changed over time since 1980. Their current duties are on the next slide. This year we have 1,552 DVOP specialists, and they were planned, and we have they are assigned in 2,466 comprehensive and affiliated American Job Centers and outstationed at locations including VR&E offices throughout the country. Okay, on the next slide, slide number 3, I have the duties of the DVOP specialist. They basically serve disabled veterans, and they serve individuals identified within the statute to include transitioning service members, wounded, ill, or injured service members, and their spouses or caregivers, and other individuals designated by the Secretary of Labor to include veterans who have had a high incidence of unemployment after the Gulf War, those between the ages of 18 and 24. They provide maximum emphasis on economically and educationally disadvantaged veterans. On the slide before this, I think we're getting way ahead of ourselves. The slide number 4, please. Significant employment barriers. You see here, I'm talking about, thank you. It's changing again. Okay. I don't know what's happening, but on the slide number 4 about significant barriers to employment, it shows an eligible veteran or a spouse is determined to have a barrier to employment if he or she belongs to any one of these 6 categories. Some have time restrictions, as you can see. The unemployed, recently separated veterans have to have been out of work for 27 or more weeks. We also work with incarcerated veterans, and there is a program called the Incarcerated Veterans Transition Program that works with individuals still incarcerated to help them transition to civilian employment so that they, especially since they're at risk for homelessness, so they don't have to become homeless when they relieve their prisons. DVOP specialists assist and may be outstationed, as I mentioned, not only at voc rehab offices, but at homeless veterans shelters to help the president's push to end homelessness among veterans and their families. Note that Jacqueline already told you about her relationship in Phoenix with the DVOP specialists. That's a proud and long-standing relationship. And now if we go to the next slide, I could mention that there is a VA, DOL, Memorandum of Understanding or Agreement on slide 5. There has been one since 1985. The most recent memorandum of understanding was signed about a month and a half ago. It established a joint work group between DOL and the Department of Veterans Affairs, and they established a collaborative VR&E process for handoff from VA voc rehabilitative counselors for intake and orientation, career identification, training, and then job development and placement. And what the MOA assures is that all individuals, all participants, receive quality employment assistance, and they adopt the White House job-driven elements. That's on the next slide. So if we can go to that. For those unfamiliar with the Vice President's report on job-driven training issued last July, the same day as the President signed into law the Workforce Innovation and Opportunities Act, it contains these four elements. The second one, private and public partnerships for education and training, localized labor market information, those referrals are based on timely information as to what careers are available for what individuals who have interests in those careers in the local area. And then, of course, we wanted to produce jobs and healthy careers and suitable employment. DOL is engaged in implementing these principles using seven DOL-based elements that quickly include, and it's not on any slide, working up front with employers to determine local or regional hiring needs, offer work-based learning opportunities with employers, including on-the-job training, internships, and pre-apprenticeships, making better use of data to drive accountability, measuring and evaluating employment and earnings outcomes, promoting a seamless progression from one educational stepping stone to another and across work-based training and education so individuals' efforts result in progress, breaking down barriers to assessing job-driven training and hiring for any American willing to work, and create collaborations among American job centers, educational institutions, labor, and nonprofit agencies. So you see there's a lot of parallels between the handoff that DGOP specialists receive from VR&E and what the Department of Labor is doing and what you all in the Employment Network do for your Social Security recipients, beneficiaries, in trying to get them using the Ticket to Work program back into suitable employment. On the current slide, it shows the process that DVOP specialists follow from receiving Chapter 31, Title 38, U.S. Code individuals from the Veterans Rehabilitative Counselors through an intensive services coordinator who will identify which DVOP specialist in the state should handle that individual. The DVOP specialist works with the vocational rehabilitation and employment participant and the office, the local office that referred him or her, expands upon the employability development plan or the individual development plan, provides a search in the area for in the local labor market for a suitable career, refers to any necessary job or training opportunities that will provide them hands-on on-the-job training and prepare them better for suitable employment. They record their placements and career results on a form. It's a VR&E tracking sheet, which goes to the VA through the intensive service coordinator on a regular basis. Can we have the next slide then? This just briefly touches upon the VR&E tracking report. And you can see the kinds of things and information we share between the Department of Veterans Affairs and the Department of Labor's Disabled Veterans Outreach Program specialists. They show who the individual was referred from and what office. Those who were referred who would not provide direct client services because of barriers to employment and they needed more assistance before being considered job ready. Those who enter suitable employment, work that is within reach of their physical and emotional capabilities and consistent with their knowledge, skills, and abilities and their interests. and those who maintain suitable employment, as Jackie defined earlier in her presentation, for at least 60 days and meet the United States Code Chapter 31 rehabilitation criteria. So that ties up my, that ends my presentation. I think we did a good job, Jackie, in getting this done within the allotted time frame. We're now available for any questions that you may have for us or the other presenters.
Okay, this is Charlene. I just kind of want to do a quick time check. Do we have time to take a couple of questions?
Let's take 10 minutes to answer questions, and then
okay,
we will conclude the call.
Okay, thank you. So, Phyllis, if you would give the instructions again, that would be great. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to register a question, please press the star followed by the 1 on your telephone keypad. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your registration, please press pound. One moment, please, for the first question. Your first question comes from the line of Stephen Gerke.
Good afternoon. My question is, I don't specialize in veterans, but it, occasionally I'll get one, and I had an individual that I was attempting to work with who was on Social Security disability and on disability from as being a veteran. And he ultimately backed off on looking for a job because he could not find out how working affected his disability as a veteran, not the Social Security disability, but the veteran disability. I was just wanting to know what to advise people.
This is Jackie. I can speak to that in that if he's talking about his compensation disability, working will not affect his compensation disability at all. However, if he was on, again, and I don't know, all the facts with your client, but if he was on individual unemployability, which is, we call that IU, it could affect if he goes to work and he works, permanent full-time for so many hours, it will affect his IU, but it will not affect his compensation disability.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
If I can interject also, this is Joel. Good question. Our DVOP specialists have a lot of disabled veterans who are special disabled veterans. Some of them are between 70 and 100% disabled, which are considered unemployable. But still want to work, and some of them volunteer. Others have we've been successful at placing others with a 50% or 30% disability in jobs that pay between $12 and $16 an hour to start, which would help compensate for any loss there would be of their compensation that they might receive. But as Jackie indicated, it doesn't change their rating if they're working or if they're not working, unless they were considered unemployable.
Okay.
Hope that helps.
Your next question comes from the line of Al Montag.
Hi, Jackie. Hi, Joel. I'm not sure who to ask this question, but I actually used to participate in this program about 9 years ago here in the Cincinnati area. And I guess it went away for whatever reason, and I had great success with the program. I've always wanted to get back to working with veterans. I have three questions. I thought that in-house voc rehab people were handling this. Are you saying that they're allowing outside contracting for this? That's my first question. I'm not really in my office right now. I'm not able to see the slideshow, but I'm just curious what the payout, some idea on what the payout is now for someone who would contract for this. And how do you get in touch with the local, what's the best way to get in touch with a local person, and what is the title of that local person to get plugged into this?
That would be a question for Jackie. I know that VRNE contracts out. DVOP specialists and Department of Labor do not contract out for any placement services.
Okay.
We rarely contract out for placement services. We have right now a contract in place that's a Vet Success contract, and that contract is really working with our independent living and case management. Very, very rarely do we contract out for employment services. So that's the answer to that question. What was your other question?
Okay, I guess, have you, I guess if you, if, now I'm not exactly sure what use we would be to you. What would an employer network, what problems would we solve, for the VA and DVOP? What solutions do you seek us to help you with?
Joel?
Sorry, can you repeat that, please?
Joel, how does an EN fit into the services that we might provide to you?
It would be if you identified an individual you're working with and having difficulty placing them. They have a ticket to work, and you have a local American Job Center near you. Those individuals don't have to go through voc rehab to be referred to the office. They'll do an assessment, and they'll determine whether or not the individual needs to be seen by a Disabled Veterans Outreach Program staff person or specialist if they have a significant barrier to employment or fit one of the criteria for DVOP services. Chances are that they do. Now, as mentioned earlier, we don't have an individual at every American Job Center, but at the ones that have the largest concentration of veterans. But we have DVOP specialists who will visit itinerant offices or smaller offices once a week, once a month, and schedule appointments. So there's no reason why the EN can't coordinate with the DVOP specialist to assist in helping a veteran.
Okay, how do we engage them?
If you go to www.servicelocator.org, it has the list. It talks all about the American Job Center offices, and by putting in a zip code, you find the one closest to you.
Great, thank you.
You're welcome.
And I think, too, that if you are working and you've identified a veteran that has service-connected disabilities, that you make sure that you connect them to voc rehab to see if there's anything that we can do as far as, you know, the training piece and then also the employment piece of that. We have a number of veterans who we work with who are on SSDI and often do use the ticket to work.
Absolutely.
Your next question comes from the line of Paula Villay.
Hi, it's Paula with Employment Options, and I have to admit that I have had the pleasure of serving some of the vets that have been referred from our local VA office here. Since we used to contract with them for placement, they knew our services. But I was wondering what percentage of disabled vets also receive as concurrent benefits with SSI and SSDI. And that's my first question.
I actually don't have, I mean, I couldn't tell you, you know, off the top of my head exactly how many are under our program and also under SSDI. It would have to be something I would have to look into and get back with you.
Well, it'd be interesting to, you know, to maybe set
yeah.
something. I mean, for you guys, I mean, we are a fabulous resource that doesn't
mm-hmm.
cost any money.
Right. No, absolutely.
And I think there's probably a lot of vets that could use our help, and I always feel bad that we're having trouble accessing them. And then the other question, of course, is always, and I know it's not a one-stop answer, is with the benefits of what they lose. So if they are on disability, if they've got the disability, then they'll keep getting their benefits, their cash benefits. But if they don't, each individual is really different for how their benefits are affected if they go to work, because that's always an issue.
again, it depends on, you know, it depends on what they're on. If they are receiving compensation disability, it's not going to affect their rating or their disability or their pay. But if they are on IU, then that's a whole different ballgame. And yes, it will affect if they go to work after, you know, what they do is they monitor them for so many months. I believe it's 9 months. And they have to also, you know, report any earnings that they're making. And yes, they will cut them off the IU because the IU is basically saying they're unemployable and they can't work.
Right. Now there's a lot of them that are receiving their medical benefits for the VA.
Right. Their disability benefits is not going to affect it.
Oh, so if they go back to work, they'll still be eligible for VA health care?
Usually they're eligible for VA health care based on their disabilities.
I see. And as long as the disability doesn't disappear, then they're still disabled.
Correct.
Right. Or I guess it never disappears once it's assessed, or are there times when service-related disabilities are determined medically improved?
It can. It's very interesting, and I'm not going to be the expert on that to talk to,
right.
But yes, absolutely. There some of their ratings can go up or down if they are not permanent in total.
Okay, so the best thing to do for us would be to work with the VA specialist who understands this particular vet's benefits.
Correct, and at each regional office, they have a public contact team, and you can walk right in and talk to one of the benefits counselors. You can also call the 1-800-827-1000 number, which will put you in touch with a benefits counselor that's on the phone. But I really encourage you, if you haven't stopped in with the VA, with the public contact team, you can. But the benefits really depend on the veteran themselves.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you very much. Interesting presentation.
The same holds true, if I can piggyback on that, for individuals who are disability retired from the military. As a disabled veteran myself, I know that we do or did, when we first got out of the military, get reassessed periodically to see whether or not our disability is still there and effective. But after a certain number of years, it's accepted, and that VA disability, service-connected disability, stays with you as mine does. I can't speak, though, to SSDI and whether or not working will impact their Social Security benefits. That would be something within house.
We know that portion.
Cognitive. Okay. Thanks.
Your next question.
Maybe one last question, because I know LaWanda gave us 10 minutes and we're a little past that. So this will be our last question, and then we'll turn it back to LaWanda. Thank you.
Your final question comes from the line of Kanisha Humphrey.
Hi. I have a question. One of the gentlemen, he mentioned earlier about engaging the DVOP, and I wanted to know, is there any suggestions on how to engage them? Because I tried myself to engage one of the DVOP agencies, and they were not very receptive to me.
That is interesting. If that is the case, in each state we have a director for Veterans Employment and Training, which is the Department of Labor's Veterans Employment and Training Service. And they would be very receptive to hear about individuals in the DVOP program who are not coordinating well or are not responsive to your requests. I don't know what state you're in, but if you go to www.dol.gov, their homepage, you can find a link to the directory. Just by clicking on a state, you can find out the information for the individual you need to speak to in your state.
Okay, because I don't want to get anybody in trouble, but it kind of, you know, when I tried contacting them to see if we can kind of work together and coordinate, it was like I was getting a runaround, and then I just got frustrated, and I just didn't go any further. And, you know, I ended up, you know, contacting another agency, so.
There are more than one DVOS specialist per state. There are other offices you can contact, depending upon where you're located, where the veterans you're helping are located. It may be that a veteran may be in a different part of the state than the office that's closest to you, and it might be that it would be better for that veteran to go to a different office. if you're not getting any satisfaction from the one you tried.
Okay.
And also, I apologize now, I'm just noticing that the PowerPoint that I sent in has different numbering than the one that you're all looking at, so I apologize if we got mixed up with which slide should be shown while I was speaking.
Okay. All right. This is Charlene again. I just really want to thank Jackie. Thank you. And thank you, Joel, for a great presentation and especially for the helpful responses to the questions. It was great questions. I'd like to remind everyone on the line today that on the Your Ticket to Work website, there is a Serving Veterans information section in the resource section of the website, and the links, the websites that Joel was talking about, links to finding the VR&E folks in your area, the DVOP specialists in your area are all there on that resource site. So it's at the Your Ticket to Work website. Just put in veterans, and it, you should be able to get to it. And as Jackie and Joel have repeatedly said, if you do not already have a relationship with these important employment service staff for common customers who are ticket eligible, you need to reach out to them, and it sounds like sometimes you have to reach out more than once. I would encourage you not to get frustrated, but to go and introduce yourself and establish those relationships, because where the DVOPs will follow along for at least 6 weeks and probably longer than that, the ENs, if it's a common customer, could follow along for possibly several years for ongoing employment supports. And just having that relationship is so important, and knowing about each other. So thank you, Jackie. Thank you, Joel, for informing us. Very helpful today. And Luanda, I'm going to turn it back to you.
Thank you, Charlene. This concludes our call for today. I would like to thank our speakers and our presenters. Thank you all for joining us today. Please be sure to join us on our next All-EN call in June, and have a great day.